I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
All right, welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. No Steve Palazzolo here. He's talking to NFL teams while we're sitting here listening to people, interviews, podiums, all that kind of stuff. He's sitting in there in the meeting rooms talking to GMs, bigwigs, ghosting us out here.
And I don't like that. Okay.
No, I know.
I'm going to give him a piece of my mind when I see him later.
I think you should. So anyway, we don't have Steve, so we got Seth Galina here.
You could have had another Steve. There's another Steve sitting right there. Steve Ruiz from the Ringers right in front of us.
Very true. We're going to talk quarterbacks. Because this is a weird draft year where normally QBs are the guys go at the top of the draft, right? You rewind 12 months. We were saying maybe five guys go in the top six picks. It ends up going 1, 2, 3. We get them all off the board by 15. Now we're heading into this year, and everybody you talk to in Indy is like, these guys aren't good. Like, this is not a good group of quarterbacks. Where do you stand on them overall?
Yeah, I mean, I made the tweet last week or whatever that like every quarterback in this class is QB3. Like there's no
right,
there really just isn't like a quote-unquote generational guy in this in this class. So it's going to be interesting like which teams fall in love with which guy, because look, at the end of the day, would you agree that we are going to see a quarterback get picked in the top 10?
Yeah,
it's gonna happen. So, right, it's just gonna happen.
Yeah.
And that's crazy to me, given what we've seen from these quarterbacks over their careers or over the last year of them playing college football. I think there are obviously some guys who you probably have. They're all potential guys, right?
Yeah.
But I think some of them maybe have that kind of quote unquote more potential just because of their athletic abilities.
Yeah.
I do think it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to that in a second. But first, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning on starting a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. The way that read is written, I thought it was going to say your playbook of life. I was like, wow, that's getting pretty deep.
Yeah. My issue is that I don't have a playbook for life. I'm rolling through it.
I think that's a lot of our problems right now. So I keep thinking about what year this group of quarterbacks kind of compares to, right? Because the last season where there wasn't a kind of clear group of good quarterbacks was that 2013 year, the E.J. Manuel season. Which everyone sort of pulls out as the year that had no good quarterbacks. It didn't really have good players, period, if you look at that draft.
It's like one of the worst draft classes, especially in the first round of all
time. So I don't think – it's not like that, right? This group is not the E.J. Manuel class where you're like, there are no quarterbacks here. But one of them is going to go in the first round because that's just the way of the world. And we're like, we're desperately clinging to E.J. Manuel's Senior Bowl week and being like, he can be it.
Wasn't the thing with the Bills – that the owner just like wanted a quarterback.
Yeah.
So they took a quarterback.
Right.
Because he was like, I'm at the end. And I guess he sold the team a couple years after to the Pegulas. And then like.
Yeah. And E.J. Manuel, you know, had a decent Senior Bowl relative to everybody else. And was like, all right, he's the guy. We're taking him.
That's it. Done. So there you go.
What it reminds me of is more the 2011 season minus Cam Newton. So if you took Cam Newton off, who was like the one superstar, insane college quarterback, just, you know, mind-blowing in college. After that, it was like, now we're talking up all these really flawed guys and convincing ourselves that Christian Ponder is a first-round quarterback and Jake Locker can put it all together and Blaine Gabbert's got the tools. And like, that's what this group feels like to me.
Here's the nice thing, though, about where the NFL is in 2011, which is not even that long ago, you know, a decade ago, compared to where it is now, is like, I think NFL has created offenses. I think we've actually talked about this, but like the NFL has created offenses that you can plug in a quote unquote developmental guy,
right,
and have some success, because the offenses aren't like, you know, we're not running West Coast offense anymore. Like, we're not going crazy with all these super incredible timing reads and blah, blah, blah. Like, we're just letting quarterbacks play. We're giving them RPOs and one read things, define things, all the play action, etc. So like the results will be better, I think, from this class. Even if like the quarterbacks are literally the same, the results will be better from this class.
I think there's a couple of things. There's one, what you're saying, which is the NFL generally has developed in such a way that it's closer to college anyway, right? So remember, you go back a few years and there was this like fear mongering that the spread in college, it's going to break the NFL because the NFL is not running spread and all these QBs are going to come out. They have no idea how to play QB and like the whole system's going to break. And then what happened is the NFL just went, well, all right, actually this spread stuff kind of works. Yeah. So let's just start adopting a bunch of that and a lot of those schemes. And actually that has the byproduct of smoothing the transition for these guys anyway. So the NFL generally has made, I don't want to say playing quarterback easier, but playing quarterback to at least a floor easier to come in and be viable, I think, is easier than it was.
Yeah.
The second thing is it's also better at taking an offense and building it around a weird skilled set player, right? A guy that doesn't have prototypical cookie cutter Peyton Manning type of, this is what we want to see. The NFL used to take those guys and just like try and make them work anyway.
Yes.
Now they look at a guy and go, well, all right, this guy doesn't play like Peyton Manning, so how do we make him good? And you go back to 2011, they weren't doing that. Now they might actually give it a shot.
I think the level of quarterback play, like the individual quarterback play, has gotten better. And that just has to do with how early these guys are getting coached by private coaches, going to 7-on-7 camps and all that stuff. With that said, it's not like quarterbacks are like so much better that you can just, you know, they get drafted and they can play right away. It's just like you said, the offense has come down for them. Quarterbacks are all bad. This is the thing that we all have to understand. If you take the mentality that all draft quarterback prospects are bad, it's a lot of stress like relieved from you. So you take that and you're like, okay, well, let's build an offense around, like you said, weird, unique guys. I mean, Jalen Hurts does not throw the ball over the middle of the field. Guess right. what? They made the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, it came to a tipping point.
Right. It might put a cap on how good you can be. Of course. But it you can do stuff with it.
Exactly. So I think, and you're just going to see teams, you know, the RPO stuff is fascinating because this year, I just wrote about it last week on PFF.com. We saw the most downfield RPO throws. So like RPOs get bucketed in the same, like if you throw a bubble screen, that's an RPO, but if you throw a slant, that's an RPO also. But like, which plays are we getting major yards off of? It's like slants and posts and stuff like that. We saw the most we've ever seen in one season in 2021. So like, okay, well, there's Malik Willis, there's Sam Howell, there's Matt Corral. Like, just put him there.
It was funny because people were sort of almost writing eulogies for the RPO not that long ago. It was like, oh, RPO has exploded on the scene. The Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, and then Doug Peterson takes it to Philadelphia, and then all of a sudden it sort of goes away, and everyone's like, oh, the RPO's done. It's like the Wildcat. It's over. We're finished now. And it isn't. It's just evolving. It's changing. I'm glad you brought up PFF.com, though, because right now you can get 25% off any PFF subscription if you use the promo code
NFLPod. TWOHIGH.
Look, you're on this podcast now, and this is the promo code we use. NFLPod will get you 25% off any subscription, and it might or might not be the only place where you can get that.
Okay, but here's the thing.
No.
You guys have been doing it for a long time. Uh-huh. You guys are a great podcast. You guys have a lot of listeners. Too High Podcast, been around for like 8 months.
Uh-huh.
So I'm talking to you people who are listening to the PFF NFL podcast.
Yeah.
If you're going to use the promo code.
Yeah, use ours.
No, use Too High, TWOHIGH, so that when my bosses come to me and say, how come you know, like what's going on with your promo code stuff, I'd be like, hey, look, we got a bunch of new people. So
see, what we like to think of ourselves as is, you know, the big corporate monopoly that puts the squeeze on the little guy, right? It really takes advantage
of our
status.
Your aura is,
you know, like there's no point in being Facebook if you're not going to buy up every competitor and stomp them out of existence, right? Like, otherwise, that's how the world works. This is capitalism in America. I moved over to this country, and if I've learned one thing, it's how to exploit my position at the top of the food chain here on our podcast and make sure people are using our promo code and nobody else's. So that's what we're going to do. All of PFF's locked article content, the NFL Draft Guide, which is pretty awesome. It's getting better year on year.
It's amazing. It's one of the most beautiful pieces of work.
It's really
in terms of like art design and graphics.
And they've been moving that forward every year, but this is like the first year where I've looked at it and been like, wow, that's really actually attractive looking. That's a really nicely designed piece of thing. You've been moving in the right direction, but this is a big leap forward. Unlocked Mock Draft Simulator 2022 free agent rankings that we've all been a part of putting up there. Data and grades from the entire 2021 season and beyond, like way back into the ether, 2014 for college, 2006 for the NFL, and plenty more. So use the promo code, support the podcast, it says here, our podcast, and use promo code NFLPod for 25% off any subscription.
Okay, let's talk about you, both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I'm kind of technically American, but both of us not really being American. But
I was technically American. What does that mean?
Well, I was born in New Orleans, but I was raised not in New Orleans.
Okay. So you're an American citizen?
No, I'm a Canadian citizen. Okay. I have both passports, though.
You got both. Can you be dual American citizenship?
I think so.
Yeah.
I never really looked into it.
That's what I'm planning on doing at some point.
Okay, so there you go.
Passing the citizenship test and then being able to like travel freely without having to show a green card and stuff and prove I belong here.
Well, you don't belong here, but that's a whole other story. No, I wanted to ask you. So you played corner?
I played wide receiver, then corner, then safety as the legs started to go.
Okay, let's go through the three here.
Okay.
What was your play style like in each position?
So I was a shifty route running type of receiver, an Emmanuel Sanders type of guy that wins with quickness, with route running, with, you know, fakes and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't a bad receiver. My problem was I didn't trust my own hands. So like relative to my own expectations, I'm like, I dropped too many passes, right? And it was pissing me off. Relative to like other people in the league, I'm like, it's fine. But in my own head, it was a problem enough that I was like, I'm going to move to corner where I don't have to catch as much, right? And it turns out catching a pass not intended for you is way easier than catching one that's intended for you.
Oh, okay. I have the complete opposite.
As it wasn't intended for me, I was like flying up one handing it out of the sky. I'm like, this is easy. once it doesn't matter if you only deflect it away, it's great. As soon as you deflect away and drop it, you're like, oh no, it just ruined the play. So I moved to corner and did that. And then safety, it was coverage. It was like deep lying, single high, rangy, free
deep
safety.
Lying playmaker.
Yeah.
The Andrew Pirlo of safeties.
We had a defense so we had a couple of good corners. We had me at free safety. We had a really good coverage unit, and we played in a league where like you could just establish the run and grind people into dirt. So our defense up front couldn't stop the run. We're like, can you please just make the pass and we will pick off like five passes today. And our defense couldn't. So you guys
were the 2021 Los Angeles Chargers.
It was so bad. There was one game we played against a team that had like a 250-pound running back. We couldn't stop them. And I got late in the game and it got to the point where I was like, I told the corners, I was like, guys, you're on your own. I'm literally not playing coverage anymore. I don't care what the play call is. I am charging at the line of scrimmage. Because if this guy got through to me, I literally couldn't stop him. He was 250. The best I can do here is bring him down where I grab him plus the 3 yards that he falls over me. And that's not good for anybody.
It's funny. Like I've been in situations like coaching defense where I'm never going to be in the situation to think, oh, we're getting run on, so let's just not play a real defense. Like,
right,
let's play cover zero. Like, let's play cover zero. And I need people to tell me this. And I have a good, one of my favorite, one of my good friends is a coaching buddy of mine. Like, he'll be like, no, it's okay if we play cover zero and we do not cover, like, we just don't have a deep safety or a half field safety. Because we need to stop the run. Like, at some point we need to stop the run. So I need to learn that as a coach sometimes.
Well, it's funny because I think the lower down the level,
the lower down the level. I'm not talking about doing it in the NFL,
like the more extreme things like that become, and you can go, look, actually, the most important thing right now is just trying to get bodies in the way of this dude because he's a freaking bulldozer, and we're getting murdered. So that's my glorious.
Yeah, this is playing career. This is where we're gonna splice in the footage of me in my flag football league from Sunday night.
Okay,
right. That's how we're gonna do it.
Yeah. Okay. There's one video of me catching a pass on YouTube somewhere.
Oh, I'm gonna find it.
It's actually pretty terrible because playing wide receiver, badly underthrown deep ball down the sideline. Right. So I kind of come back for it, catch it here, and took my eyes off and started running. Only I hadn't really caught it. So there's a bit where you can just about see me sort of realizing as I'm running, having to grab back and get it again, and then take off and run. And then I got flagged for spiking the ball as a celebration. So it was pretty fun.
You were playing the No Fun League.
Yeah. Apparently that was illegal, and I got flagged for it. I also got flagged once for face guarding, which literally wasn't a penalty in the league.
I'm never sure. Is face guarding a penalty? It's not a penalty in college, and it is in the NFL. Something like that. I always forget.
I think it was the other way around.
I don't know.
It's not in the NFL, or it was. But anyway, it wasn't where we played, and I got flagged for it.
Still remember that 25 years later.
I held a grudge pretty well. Pretty well. So let's get back to this group of quarterbacks.
Do we have to?
I mean, look, I don't think we can sustain an entire podcast talking about our glorious football playing careers.
Speak for yourself.
Not one that people want to listen to.
That's true.
Way.
That's right. That's right.
So if you're this group of QBs, who's the one guy that you're going to talk yourself into, or that somebody's going to talk themselves into drafting in the top 10?
It's honestly, and you could really find a reason for all of them, I think, for like the five, I guess, there are. At the end of the day, if you're talking about like, I want to see how you feel about this, because I think when we're looking at quarterbacks, like, you probably need some sort of A-plus trait, elite trait, right? And I always go back to the Tua example, where Tua's thing was supposed to be, you know, he's like B-plus arm strength and B-plus accuracy and, like, you know, B mobility or whatever, but A-plus processing. It was supposed to be processing.
Right.
But, like, we can't really use processing as a trait. Like, that is not, we just don't know. We don't know enough about the transfer from college to NFL in terms of processing to really use that ever. So then it's like, okay, well, then what does Tua have as an elite trait that he can just fall back on all the time? Herbert, we know what it is. I don't have to tell your audience what it is. Burrow, we know what it is. You know, the accuracy. With Lamar, it's the running, right? You know, there's something, all these quarterbacks have some sort of elite trait that as they're growing up in the league, they can just fall back on and like give themselves a floor. So like when I look at it that way and trying to like not draft Tua again, like I'm sorry, like I know it's only been 2 years and I'm not ready to write him off. I'm not ready to write him off right now. But at the end of the day, he hasn't played great for 2 years, right? So if you're trying not to do that again, well, it's Malik Willis, because he has A-plus. If he comes into the league right now, you know, if Lamar is like the S-tier quarterback runner, he's tier one. Like, he's right below that, or maybe even in that same group. He's a legitimately awesome runner. And then the arm strength is off the charts. And I know he's not inaccurate. I don't think he's like pinpoint accurate, but he actually is pretty accurate. So that's the guy. Just give yourself a floor. Now, he has processing problems. Like, it's bad. It's really not good. But at the same time, like, kind of screw it. Because, like, what is your max with Kenny Pickett? What is your max with Sam Howell? Like, that's
like,
the issue, right?
To me, from the moment that playoff game between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes happened, you're like, that changes the way people are going to look at this draft.
Yeah.
Because if you're sitting there in that game and you have whatever, like a random, if you have Tua, right? If you have a random quarterback that's just somewhere in the middle, right? You're looking at that and you're like, what are we doing? Like, we can't compete with that. We're a different game.
It's not,
these guys are insane.
Like, watching Garoppolo play.
Right.
So that's for me, though,
you know,
what it is.
There's no conceivable, it's not within his range of outcomes to do that ever. So if they do that and we have him, we're done. Like, that game is literally already over before we play it. So I think it changes everything for teams sitting there with one of those QBs. I think it also changed everything for teams looking at this draft and being like, okay, none of these guys are great. which one can even get there? Like, which one, well, if you look at that, you know, that bell curve of like the range of possible outcomes, whose curve even reaches that point? And it's only Malik Willis.
Really, that's what it is.
And yeah, he might have some flaws and he's got some weird data traits in terms of like sack rate and how many scrambles and all these kinds of things. A lot of things that would make you go, I don't know. But he's got that freakish arm. He's got crazy athleticism. And like he almost reminds me of like, what if you supercharged Jalen Hurts' arm?
Yes.
And made him like target anywhere you wanted. Like I think he's that kind of runner more than he's a Lamar runner. Maybe a little bit better, but he's got an insane arm. His highlight reel of throws is ridiculous.
It's out of control.
And you can work with that. Like we've already seen with Hurts, you can work
with
that.
And it's like, okay, yeah, like we look back in 5 years and I'm just naming it, like Pickett. And Pickett is like a top 10 quarterback in the league. And it's like just literally just because they hit on process. He figured it out.
Right.
But it's like, is that the type you want to? Is that what you want to do if you're spending all this money on a quarterback?
He's the guy, I think, that he almost has to be the first quarterback off the board because he's the one guy that fits that category of like upside, traits, whatever it is. The ceiling is just highest. And if none of these guys are sure things, go for the guy with the highest ceiling and hope you hit it.
Would I take him above Lawrence and Fields and even Lance last year? Probably not.
Right.
Wilson, I wasn't huge on Wilson last year, but like in the middle. But like that's the thing. Like we don't have those quarterbacks in this class, so like I guess I guess I would take him first.
So a couple of
not
guys,
first overall,
right? First quarterback. A couple of guys I want to talk about. Sam Howell is so one of the intriguing things about this QB class is that almost all of them tanked in their final season relative to like where they were supposed to go, right, and get better and keep developing and become those top 10 draft picks that we were expecting a year ago. And almost none of it didn't happen for anybody except Kenny Pickett. He was the one guy that had the good year. So when you start looking at why didn't they get better the way we thought they were going to? You can make excuses for all of them. You can make all of those things. Sam Howell's the one guy where the excuses to me make the most sense.
Yeah, the surrounding talent.
Right. The surrounding talent, the fact that they pivoted offense, that he went run
which actually
heavy.
Impressed me the most because I was expecting a good year from Sam Howell.
Because of the talent
was and my thing was always the same, like where especially in the run game. Now the offensive line wasn't great at North Carolina his 3 years there, but you know, with Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, you were like, hey, first and 10 run, if I hand the ball off, I'm gonna be in second and four. And that changes who you are because you're not in third and eights all the time. And then honestly, the running game wasn't as good and he was still good. But again, maybe not the level that we wanted, right?
And he became this like dominant rushing threat himself. Like he was busting tackles, he started running himself like a fullback. That was something I don't think many people saw.
He changed his game a bit this year,
a lot. So, based off, if you look back and you sort of say, "Well, we thought Sam Howell was going to become this top 10 QB prospect, right? He'd shown a lot last year. If he gets better, the usual sort of development arc." He's got the tools, he's got the arm, he's got the ability, and apparently he's got a rushing threat that we didn't necessarily think he had. He's a guy as well that makes some sense to me to be talked into, right? If you can explain away those things and say, I get why he didn't develop the way we thought.
And I think I wrote about this on PFF.com, and you can use the promo code TOOHIGH.
You can get that one. It's your article. Yeah, I'll have that one.
Well, just like what is the issue here with Howell? And I really think his feet aren't great in terms of like staying quote unquote composed in the pocket and, you know, going through his progressions in this efficient manner that you teach quarterbacks. But then I'm like, okay, well let's fix it.
Right.
And then we have a quarterback there. But then the issue is, I said that about Sam Darnold. You know, Sam Darnold was this tight end who played quarterback at USC.
We're in this weird world now where I don't think people know what's fixable anymore.
It's
because
crazy.
All the things that you used to think you couldn't fix, Josh Allen came along and broke it all, right? It's like you can't teach accuracy. Well, it turns out apparently you can.
Yeah.
Like apparently you can completely overhaul a guy's mechanics and teach him how to be accurate in the space of 3 years.
The Herbert thing is funny because I read an article on The Ringer, I guess, about the journalist who's sitting in front of us right now was talking to Herbert's quarterback coach, John Beck, I believe. And the idea there was like, well, Oregon was not getting on him for a lot of stuff.
Right.
Like, hey, you're super talented. We're winning games, obviously, because we recruit better than the Pac-12 at the time. And we're fine. Like, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it.
And you're our best player. And you're our best player. We're not going to get on you for this stuff.
Exactly. And then he goes with Beck. You know, Herbert goes with Beck in the offseason, and they fix whatever needed to be fixed. And all of a sudden, here's your quarterback. And then this plays into, like, a bigger conversation about, like, what are we looking at when we're looking at quarterbacks in the draft or any position in the draft? Is like, are we projecting negatives on him that he just wasn't asked to do?
Right.
Like, Herbert was not asked to do this. Justin Fields, we had this whole conversation last year. Justin Fields, what was Justin Fields asked and not asked to do?
Yeah. That was my first, like, takeaway of watching Justin Fields tape. You're watching that offense and you're like, oh, this is going to be a real pain in the ass to evaluate, because what is this?
Receiver talent is ridiculous, and they're spread.
Receiver talent's insane. The offense is not asking him to do anything complicated. It's just like, drop back, look at Olave, wait till he's open and hit him. Like, what the hell is that? I mean, that's great.
My favorite.
It's dominating, but it's not much use for the NFL.
My favorite thing about the Ohio State offense, and it, nobody will press their receivers, okay? Because of who you have there for the past 7 years, right?
You can't
press the receivers. So what you end up seeing on tape a lot from all the players, and especially like the last, from like Fields and now Stroud this year, as Ryan Day has kind of retooled it to be more vertical, because they're like, well, screw it, we have all these players, let's just be vertical, right? Is you get these like deep out routes and deep comeback routes because everyone is so far off.
Yeah.
And it's like, so that you can evaluate a bit, but then like you said, it's just like, well, let me just wait for this 18-yard speed out to hit, and it's like, well, that's an explosive player.
And the line holds up, and all he has to do is drop back and stand there waiting for this thing to be open and fire the ball in there. You're like, this is a useless play for NFL evaluation, other than having the arm to do that.
Yeah, the arm strength to do that. And I actually love Fields. Fields for me is a generational type of prospect. But the funny thing is, when Ohio State played Michigan this year, and they did score some points and they moved the ball a bit, but Michigan pressed Ohio State receivers more than any team had pressed them in through our data in like 5-6 years. And it was like, oh, now all of a sudden that offense, I don't want to get into a tangent on like literally the Ryan Day, you know, Ohio State offense, but like, oh, all of a sudden the offense is a little different now that you get pressed anyways.
It's an important point, I just wanted to sound smart there. Yeah, it's good. Well done. It's an important point though that like, when we're looking at these guys, particularly this year, and it's like they've got flaws, they've got whatever, mechanical problems, whatever the problem is, I think we're in this weird, weird world now, given the last few years of quarterbacks to come into the league, where I don't know that people understand anymore what is fixable and what isn't. And I think that can work in a few different ways. There are going to be teams out there that think they can fix everything and start drafting any toolsy quarterback, regardless of his flaws, and be like, we did it with Josh Allen, let's do it again. And then there are going to be other teams who sort of look at that and go, no, look, you still can't fix whatever it is. Like, the one unicorn isn't changing our opinion on this. And they're going to potentially miss out on guys that you could have fixed, like Josh Allen.
Well, and the thing with Allen, from what I remember reading about him after year two, when, you know, and he was going into year three and had that incredible breakout in year three, was they had figured, they did some like biomechanical tests and like, I don't know what. And they found that he wasn't generating any power, or like basically he wasn't generating power from his hips to start the throwing process. And they fixed it with whoever his quarterback coach, maybe like Jordan Palmer or whatever. And what it did was, besides the fact that he started the process of throwing like a normal, like you're supposed to, it stabilized a lot. When you start from the hips and you're able to like fire the hips first and then everything comes after, it stabilized a lot of things else.
They need to just get him on the Dak Prescott dance routine.
It's funny. That's what it was. Like that's what when you see Dak do that stuff and you see Brady do all that stuff that he does pregame, that's weird. It's all about firing, being able to, I'm going to sound smart again, being able to disassociate the hips and the chest.
Yeah.
Like get the hips firing and then the chest lags behind to create the torque you need to throw the football, but what it does is it stabilizes your arm and you become a little bit more accurate, so you're getting the power and the accuracy from the same thing. But it's like, okay, yes, it happened to Josh Allen, this is a really cool thing that I'm saying about biomechanics. Guess what, every other quarterback who's in the league gets that type of, has the money to spend on these type of machines,
sure.
And did Sam Darnold ever get better? No.
Nope. So never happened. Hoops fans, the latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is too good to pass up. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still take your shot at a big payday. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Basketball Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $1 on any NBA team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code PFF at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older. Minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
People don't like when I do my ad reads.
Your ad reads are something.
Okay.
Something.
All right, well, then never mind.
Wait, no, go
on. I was going to try and bring you down to my level.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, you fumbled a couple words.
Sure.
It happens. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm just saying I'm human. I'm human.
You are human. You're right. There's a special level of awkward with some of your ad reads, which I think, it reaches a level where I think it becomes endearing again, you know? You go all the way through.
I'm trying really hard, though. Like, there's no me being like, I'm going to fuck it up on purpose. It's like, I'm just a dumb person. That's what it
You've gone, like,
to.
All the way through bad and out the other side, and it's now funny, right? that's I think, the thing to shoot for.
Yeah, that's
Don't just half-ass being bad. If you're going to be bad, be all the way bad so that it's funny to watch. I think you've achieved that. That's something to be proud of.
I'm going to put that on my resume.
Maybe not as proud as just getting it right in the first place, but right. It's right there. Like, it's the next best thing. So I wouldn't, go with it. Go with it. That can be your shtick, the terrible ad read guy.
Yeah, that's going to get me a lot of money in the future.
Well, so the trick is to like make it so bad that like the listeners love it, right?
Even if the
companies are dumping you at rapid rate of knots, the listeners will keep propping you
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Or did they like it so much and feel sorry for you that they buy enough of the company stuff that the companies love it anyway, even if it's terrible? They're looking through the data and they're like, I don't know why this is working. But apparently it is.
Well, every new company that's going to come on is going to be like, wow, look at how many listeners they have.
Mm.
Not realizing that within 3 months, they're not going to want to be part of the podcast anymore.
All right. So we can talk ourselves into Malik Willis. We can talk ourselves into Sam Howell a little bit. Talk to me about Kenny Pickett, because he's the one guy that like improved his stock this year. Significantly. You're the one guy that got better, that had the arc that you want to see, which is, peaking in the final year. And has potentially propelled himself up draft boards. And yet here we are at the scouting combine. And the only thing anybody's ever going to want to talk about is his like tiny, tiny little hands.
Yeah. So I've famously been wrong about like every quarterback ever. But the one thing I kind of got right was Pickett going into his last year at Pitt this past season, this offseason, me and PFF Tony were talking about the returning quarterbacks. And I made the point to say, hey, don't sleep on Kenny Pickett, because one of the issues was he was an average quarterback and they gave him an offense that was like difficult, quote unquote. They didn't give him RPOs. They didn't give him screens and receivers were taking it, and making his stats look better. They weren't giving him all that stuff. They were making him throw tough concepts over the middle of the field. And I was like, okay, well, now he's going into his like year 33 season at Pitt. Like if something clicks and they change the offense a little bit, if something clicks, we could have a big season. And that's exactly what happened. So, but now it's like, okay, well, now we're talking about a different thing here. Now we're talking about going to the NFL, where it's like, are you just maxed out already? Like, is that a problem?
Yeah.
And did you have, there's obviously a lot of Joe Burrow comparisons, because like Joe Burrow, they gave him a tough offense to handle, throws over the middle of the field, quick game, all that stuff. He handled it well, but Burrow was A+ accuracy and Pickett is right. B+ accuracy.
Who has the worst quarterback take on their resume between you and me? Is it you with Justin Herbert just can't play on video, which probably makes it worse? Or is it me saying that Tom Brady was no longer a top five quarterback in the year 2014?
But the Brady thing, okay, here's the thing with the Brady thing. Like, it's me. The answer is me. But the thing with the Brady thing is like, and I, I, it's impossible. I don't want to get in trouble, but it's like impossible to look at him, especially these past 2 years in Tampa, and be like, that's, it's not natural. Right? Like, it's not. Like, I'm sorry. You can't, like, I remember I was talking to a friend of mine who works at, like, Next Gen Stats, and he was like, he was talking to me about, like, the velocity charting, the velocity tracking they do on throws.
Yeah.
And Brady is, like, literally in the same group with, like, 24-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, that's, everything, come on now.
Everything about him is better athletically than it was when he came into
so the league. So, that's, I don't want to say anything else.
But it's the avocados in the water and
yeah,
stuff.
It's the avocados. It's the TB12 method. TB12. Yeah. It's all the avocados.
It's
and
science.
Like,
I don't really
that's what science
this.
Is. The waitress at Chili's yesterday. I went to Chili's for the first time yesterday.
Okay.
and she was hyping up the avocados in the Turkey Avocado Club.
Yeah.
So she was probably.
Did she reference Tom Brady?
Yeah. She was trying to force the TB12 method on me at the Detroit Airport Chili's.
Well, that's how they get you. You know, that's how you get you get these people out here evangelizing. Is that the word?
I think so. Yeah.
Evangelizing about the TB12 method. They got to hit you at the restaurants where they've got that stuff set up. You're a captive audience. You can't get out of there.
It's a fake grassroots movement.
Okay, so it's you. That's the upshot of that. Is you,
yeah,
you have
I think
the worst
it's me.
Take.
I think it's me.
Yeah. I mean, they're both pretty bad.
They're both bad, yeah.
Like, it's not even that, you know, that Brady just didn't.
But what was the I don't remember what was the 2014 season that made you...
So it made sense. It was the one where, remember, he had that nightmare game against Kansas City in, like, week 4.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the summer heading into that year, right?
Okay.
And then, like, 4 weeks in, he has that nightmare against Kansas City, and I'm almost, like, taking victory laps. Like, yeah, see, assholes, you gave me all this crap in the summer about this, and here he is looking like ass against the Chiefs in week 4. And basically from that moment on, he's been the best quarterback in the league since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So
you're a very smart person.
It went bad from that point on. It went south and got pretty ugly. All right, so we've both got some pretty horrible quarterback takes. So who else we got to talk about? Desmond Ridder and Matt Corral.
Yeah, so I think Ridder's fun because, again, it's like it depends on what you want to see from your quarterback. And, like, the Cincinnati offense gave him a bunch of, like, quote-unquote NFL concept, where he's got to, like, read out a play. The problem with him is, like, sometimes he's, like, not accurate.
Isn't Ridder, like, the classic second-round quarterback that, like, just in this year, we put him in the first-round conversation because this year of quarterbacks are bad. But, like, in any other year, he's just a standard second-round guy.
I think, obviously, he does have a cannon. He can move around, got some really good mobility. Like I said, played in an offense where, conceptually, he did, like, NFL stuff. But then it's like, okay, but then were the results there?
It feels like everything is like B-.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, did you make the right reads all the time? Well, I don't know. Did he throw the ball over people's heads sometimes? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, but I
can
like
he
him.
Move around? Yeah. Yeah. Like, but it's not amazing. Yeah.
The only thing for him, it's like it is an A- arm, I would say.
Okay.
Like the arm is pretty good. He's got a cannon. But yeah, so you're like, oh, okay, it's okay.
Right.
But again, he's still behind Lawrence. He's still behind Fields.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
probably
I mean,
still behind Lance.
Right.
Like, you know, so yeah. Yeah, with Corral, it's really just for me. You know, our accuracy data on him is not very good. Most of his yards come from screens, RPOs, and play action.
That to me is the thing with Corral. It's like, how do you get past that offense?
And like, even the non, even when you take away play action, screens, RPOs, you see a lot of like. I'm stealing this from my friend Justice Mosqueda, but like he called them like vanity concepts, where it's like Lane Kiffin like just creating something in the dropback game where, for one receiver to get open, and he gets open, and Corral throws it to him, and here's your explosive play. But like there's not like a lot of him seeing him go through progression stuff, which like again, is it possible? We don't know anything about processing going from NFL to college, so maybe going from college to NFL, so maybe he actually does have it, but it is concerning that. Ole Miss didn't put that on his plate.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's an unknown that can cut both ways, right?
Yep.
It can either, and that's why things like interviews are important, right? You throw him up there and you see what he knows, and you ask him those questions, like why didn't you get all these concepts? And
like the Mahomes,
if we drew one up, what
the
do you
Mahomes
do?
Thing, where everyone's like, yeah, we like the Saints said he's the best interview we've ever seen. Obviously, the Chiefs said it was the best interview.
Yeah.
Clearly, he and like you see it on his film. He's in the NFL at least. He's a savant.
Yeah.
Right. This year was a little weird year for him, but like he's a savant, and that's why he's so good.
Yeah.
So, and you could probably, and like you said, you could probably find this stuff out
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's value to that stuff. Like, there's
in the meetings,
you can find out a lot about a guy in 10 minutes, even if the questions are stupid and it sounds like it's ridiculous and there's no purpose to it and all those kind of things. You learn a lot about somebody.
You learn a lot when you ask them if their mother was a prostitute. That's really what
100%
you get from the NFL.
Absolutely. Combine. Really important pieces of data that go into the spreadsheets and give you a different answer than if you were just plotting out, you know, the regular career arc.
Yeah.
But like, you know, how many people have you met in your life where like in the first 2 minutes, you're like, that guy's an asshole. I'll never talk to him again. Like, yeah.
I'm sitting next to one.
Right. So this is the same thing, right? The NFL's version of that is you sit down with a quarterback and in 5 minutes, you can tell that guy has no business being your starting quarterback, or he does, right?
Apparently the Eagles are doing this thing for the past couple of years where they have like an NFL, a basketball pop shot.
Yeah. That's what Sam Howell was saying.
Yeah. They have it in the pop shot and like, that shows competitiveness. I'm not sure I agree with that, but like apparently that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, if the quarterback walks in or whatever player walks in, you say, hey, you got to get to 15 in 30 seconds or whatever. No, I don't know. I'm making up numbers here, but like
Sam Howell said he went 2 for 5 for the pop shot, so he's probably not high on their list.
Yeah, so that's it.
I need to know what the shot is. Like, how far are we talking? What's the range? What's the angle?
But I don't think the actual game is the question here. The question
you just
is
see how he reacts.
To hey, this is a target. We're gonna set a target for you.
Yeah.
Are you competitive enough to in this like low key environment get up for it?
It does feel like teams overthink this stuff a lot.
God, it's crazy.
But I do think there is value to the idea that like within 5 minutes you can get a pretty good idea sometimes of like whether a guy is an asshole.
Yeah,
or
but then you get the whole like what's the owner of the Brown Haslam.
Yeah, Jimmy Haslam.
Yeah, and him like being like, I shook Deshaun Kizer's hand.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're gonna,
and I loved it.
At the end of the day,
the grip was nine. Right. It was a plus 1.5 handshake.
Like it does the flaw with that line of thought is that it does open you up to essentially the subjectivity of whatever guy is on the other end of that, and that guy might be a moron, just happens to be a billionaire. So that's definitely a problem. But I do wonder, like, if you sat down.
But no billionaires are morons, so they wouldn't be billionaires, right? That's how it works.
I do wonder that, like...
That's a joke, by the way.
if you sat down pre-draft with... Because you look back now, right? One of the things I've been intrigued by is, like, if you start isolating Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield from, like, an attitude, competitive standpoint, like, why does it work for one guy and not for the other? And everyone's... Because now, like, revisionist history, it's like, well, Baker's got an attitude problem. And you could see this with the throwing the football dude in the end zone and planting the flag and blah, blah. It's like, well, kind of all of that stuff is Burrow.
Same with Burrow.
And
guess what the difference is?
And nobody cares, right?
Yeah, it works because he's a better quarterback.
Of course.
Like, right.
But what I'm curious, though, if you could sort of rewind history and do like back-to-back those guys, right, and put them in the room and have a 10-minute conversation about, would you come out thinking that they're the same guy from a personnel or a personality standpoint?
Honestly,
would you actually be able to discern a difference and say, you know what, from the outside, there's a lot of similarities, but actually this guy – like it sort of works with them, you know. There's a leadership thing. There's something different, right? Whereas this guy just kind of seems like an ass. I don't know.
No, I think you would find the same. I think you wouldn't be able to, you know. When I think about the stuff that Joe Burrow was doing, okay, maybe it wasn't as like obvious as like the crotch grab and stuff like that. But when he's talking about looking at the Clemson bench and doing the ring thing.
Like, it's a lot of the same stuff.
Dude, they beat Vanderbilt, and he was putting up, like I threw five, like the five, because he threw five against Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's kind of the same thing. So I don't know. Do you think you would be able to discern a difference?
I think again, probably not.
Hindsight
but,
being 2020, we were like, yeah.
Right.
But.
I think probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised if you came away from like a 10-minute conversation with those guys and thought it was slightly different.
Okay.
You know, I think there is potential value to that. The problem is it does open you up to this world of subjectivity and going by your gut. And if your gut is bad, it's not helping anybody. All right. Now we've reached the peak of the podcast today, which is the Manscaped ad read. Can I get a round of applause, everyone?
That's just me.
There you go. See, I got one. Okay. It's two guys. It's not quite a round of applause. it's two people clapping. One of them appeared to be only using one hand as well. Hey, wow. Here we go. Anyway. Today, I'm excited to announce Manscaped launched their Ultimate Premium Collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not-so-private parts. I'm talking about a leveled-up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This is an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man and covers you from head to toe, literally, it puts in parentheses there. It's important. Manscaped is trusted below the waist, and now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off with free shipping with the promo code PFF. I'd recommend using the products in this order, Seth. Number one, hop in the shower and scrub-a-dub-dub that body with the Manscaped body wash. Number two, lather your hair up with the 2-in-1 shampoo conditioner to keep your noggin toggin. I can use that because I can't, you know, so it's more for you than me, that one.
I do a very good job of pretending I'm not bald. Trust me, I'm
great.
It's not good. It's not good up there.
Number three, dry off and spray on the hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. Number four, put on the Manscaped deodorant for obvious reasons. Number five, pop that Manscaped lip balm on. No one is out here kissing chapped up lips. Getting dressed after is optional, though in this particular scenario, I'd say highly recommended. Wear one great scent all day long. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle, thanks to Manscaped.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So people that do a good job of disguising being bald. I had to drive back home yesterday for my kids' play, Aladdin. And there was a guy in front of me in the bleachers, the seats, whatever, who had like this perfect, luscious, full head of wavy hair, like phenomenal head of hair. You're like, that's outstanding at this point. Yeah. And then when you saw it from behind, there was just this like egg-sized, complete bald spot, just absent. Like someone had ripped out a patch of his hair. And I'm like, does he know that? Because from the front.
Does he know that?
From the front, that's like a perfect hairline, like boom, everywhere, full head, like thick coverage all over the place, but just that one, it's like someone has just ripped out a patch of hair.
So I have the bald spot in the back, and like the nice thing about it being in the back is like I don't have any sort of like wraparound mirror where I see it.
Right, and you're not confronted by you're not confronted by the shame of it on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Whereas me, you know, it's all going from the front.
Yeah,
it's you're just daily confronted by the sadness of your own situation.
I'm confronted by the sadness of my life very often, actually.
But I was sitting there, you know, during this play of 8-year-olds doing whatever crap they do for Aladdin, and you're like, does he know? Like, is he completely unaware that there's like a giant chunk of his hair missing at the back of his head? Or is that the kind of thing you feel as you run your hands through your luscious head of hair? You're like, hang on, these are the things I think about.
How was the play?
It was okay. So
grade your kids.
My kid was fine. I mean, you know, she was good. She initially went for the part of Jasmine, right? One of the lead roles in Aladdin. Didn't get it.
Just played a tree.
She played like Agrabah number five or something, right?
But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. The kid that did get Jasmine is
negative 0.5.
She's the daughter of the head of the PTA. I'm not
that. Oh, buddy.
I'm just putting out facts. I'm not saying it had anything to do with that. I'm just saying that's the reality. Okay. The second reality is that kid was terrible. Now look, there was a lot of good kids, a lot of fine performances. That kid wasn't one of them. Nobody knows what school district. They don't know where it is. I'm not naming the child. I'm not naming and shaming the 8-year-old. I'm just saying she wasn't very good. So we have data points now, right? Potentially corrupt process,
right? And but the problem is we don't know about processing going from Aladdin to the Little Mermaid.
It's true.
Like we don't know.
Maybe it was just the wrong play for her.
Exactly.
Maybe her skills lie elsewhere.
There
maybe she could be a tree.
Give her Waiting for Godot, and let's see if she can cook with that.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible. Yeah. You need the right situation, the right environment around you for you to flourish. And I'm really directing my blame in the wrong place.
Will you be directing the next play at the school?
No, God no.
Oh,
she wants me to coach her soccer team though. I so don't want to do it. She played soccer last season or whatever, and it was one of the most pathetic athletic endeavors I've ever seen.
Shit, nonstop shitting on kids.
Not just for her, but all of them.
Kids.
All of them. Like the most likely way to score a goal was from your own goal kick and concede one. Like that was the most likely scenario was the goalkeeper would kick it immediately to the opposing striker and they would fire it right back in the goal. That was the most likely way a goal was being scored.
My biggest problem, so I didn't grow up playing soccer, but I played like in like these like adult leagues in my 20s and whatever. And I was so So when you don't grow up playing it, and then you grow up and you start watching soccer, and like, you know, obviously grow up in North America, it's obviously different, but like from where you grew up, but so like, you know, 2006, 2007, start watching soccer. So I'm watching the Pep Guardiola Barcelona team, and I'm thinking, and I'm playing like fullback, and I don't know any better. So we're in like a final game, the championship match.
You're like ticky tacky,
and I'm trying to and I conceded three turnovers that led directly to goals, and we lost 3-2 because I just don't know any better.
Presumably by trying to attempt like a 4-yard pass as well. Like I just gave it back to him immediately.
That's yeah, it's like we're gonna play the goalie. The goalie is available. The goalie is
like I've seen Xavi do this. Exactly. I just passed it 5 yards to my right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's a learning curve for all of us. So I think the upshot of this is we don't love this quarterback class. We think we can talk.
We were talking about that.
Yeah, somewhere back in the distant memory, we were talking about actual NFL players in the combine and stuff before we got onto shitting on 8-year-olds in Aladdin. We don't love the quarterback class. We think we can talk ourselves into Malik Willis, maybe Sam Howell.
Yeah,
you
Ritter. I can see Ritter. Pickett's the one where you have to hit on processing with Pickett.
Yes,
that's the issue.
How much do you care about the hand size thing?
I actually
saw Burrows was 9, right? Which 9
right.
is
he's going to be shorter.
Yes,
than 9.
9 is supposed to be the cutoff, yeah. Right? It's like if you clear 9, you're okay, but we don't like it.
You know,
but if you're under 9,
and I saw
he's supposed to be like 8.25 or something.
I saw our Kevin Cole write an article about like stuff that translates from the combine,
right.
And like hand size for both receiver and quarterback translates pretty well for like PFF WAR.
So this is why I didn't love my ability to catch. I have small hands.
But like this is the thing that like nobody talks about, and I've been around quarterbacks and receivers for my whole life, and then every time I look back and I think about the quarterbacks that I've coached and the good ones, I'm just like, oh right, this kid had freakishly big hands.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Brett Favre hold a football?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
His little finger comes down like almost the bottom of the ball. It's like
yeah, of course
insane.
He's going to be a good quarterback.
Right. And then saying I think there's definitely something to it for receivers. Like the size, like Larry Fitzgerald's hands, right, go up to like here.
Yeah.
Like think of just the percentage surface area he has to play with. That guy should never drop a ball. Like it's insane. So I think there's definitely something to that. And if Pickett 100%. Comes in here with like 8.25-inch hands, that's going to scare the hell out of a lot of people. Even if the story is double jointed, but like whatever, like they're only 8.5
inches
across.
At the end of the day, that's the measurement.
Yeah.
So it does scare me a little bit. And again, so he's going to have to be perfect at everything else.
And it's a good thing for him that like Burrow, you know, just looks amazing based off 9 and it's good, but it's still going to scare the crap out of teams for a guy that they didn't love in the first place. And definitely not do his stock any good.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're done. I think we've written off this QB class. They're out of here.
They all suck.
Yeah, they all suck, but we like Malik Willis's arm and running ability, so we'll take him high anyway and then live with the fact that we get fired over it down the line.
I've theoretically been fired from every fake GM job that
Perfect.
I've had.
Yeah. So that'll do it for this podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with the latest in our series of Fixing Your Team in 5 minutes. That's quote-unquote 5 minutes. It's actually a lot longer than that, but you know, if you listen to this podcast, you'll understand that. Thank you very much, Seth. It's been fun.
Anytime.
I didn't think we'd get on to, you know, tiki-taka soccer, Xavi, Aladdin.
Yeah, Xavi's bringing back Barcelona now.
I mean, look, sort of. I wouldn't go that
far. The past, like, 4 games, they've been on fire.
Yes, 4 games.
Yeah,
right.
4 games.
I'm also quite intrigued how they've, like, somehow brushed away being like $1 billion in debt, and somehow it's not a problem anymore.
They signed like 3 players that start for them now in January.
Yeah. So it's, we'll see. That's kind of weird. But anyway, that's been the PFF NFL podcast. We'll see you again tomorrow.